Sport Podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome along to The Punt Podcast here with William Hill. Good to have your company ahead of all the weekend action in the Premier League and indeed lower down in the Football League as well. Dave Kellner here, and we will shortly be joined by The Telegraph's chief football correspondent, Jason Burt. We'll reflect on the first week of action and tell us whether Tony Adams, who was quite outspoken in a piece on TalkSport midweek, was right to eviscerate Unai Emery after just one competitive game in charge at Arsenal. We'll also dip our toe into the action on the continent with the first European nap this season. Alex Dunn will join the trio of Pete Farris, Al Ross and Gav Puchalski, who will give their best bets in the Football League. But first, the man that has no peers when it comes to targeting the world's greatest goal scorers. It's a warm welcome to Derek McGovern. Good morning to you, Derek.
Good morning, Dave.
Are you well?
Yes, very well. Yes, great for the Premier League to be back, isn't it? Great weekend last weekend. I haven't looked ahead, but I'm guessing in about 2 or 3 weeks' time when we're just made up that everything's back, England will be playing and there'll be no games again. I didn't look.
That is coming up in September, Derek. I'll keep you abreast of the situation as far as that is concerned. Apologies for last week, first of all, because I mentioned on this podcast that Derek was on the back foot as far as the naps were concerned because the treble had landed in the first week. That was an error on my part. It was let down by Al Ross, that treble. So starting as we mean to go on, Derek, with a cock-up.
Yes, I'm revelling in that misfortune.
Your nap selection, by the way, Derek, went behind after a minute and 32 seconds. I think that might be the quickest ever, is it?
No, I'll tell you what, no, that is definitely not a record.
Let's get stuck into this week then. We start with Cardiff versus Newcastle, 12:30 kickoff on Saturday afternoon. Cardiff 19-10 to win this game. The draw 11-5, Newcastle 29-20. Bobby Reid to score and Cardiff to win was 9-2. That's been enhanced to 5-1. And the first mention on the podcast this season, Derek, for Salomon Rondon. For him to score and Newcastle to win, that was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 9-2. And I get the feeling with this match, Derek, it's a game that will provide us with a fair barometer for how these two teams are going to perform this season. I think there's a strong suspicion that Cardiff will end up being the worst team in the Premier League at the end of the season. And even though they had 10 shots in their defeat against Bournemouth, only had one on target. And in that match last weekend, Derek, they were overrunning midfield, even though they should be perhaps aided by the return or the start of their new signings, Victor Camarasa and Harry Arter. They should come in this weekend. They looked pretty poor last week.
Yeah, they did. I think we're in for a repeat of the last time they were in the Premier League a few seasons ago. I think they were in the league that season for no reason other than to appear last every week on Match of the Day. A mantle that's since been passed to Everton. I just can't see how Newcastle are not flying. We know that there's problems. They don't sign anybody. The manager's tighter than a coat of paint. There's no room for optimism in Newcastle. But I'd rather be there. I'd rather be a Newcastle fan than a Cardiff fan, especially under that manager, Neil Warnock. He did wonders getting them up from the Championship. But at his level, we've seen it time and time again. This game, by the way, David, there are twins in opposition, aren't they? Jacob and Josh Murphy on either side. I think it's the first time twins have ever been in opposition in the Premier League game.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I might be wrong there. People talk about sibling rivalry. You know, I always felt my mother preferred my brother to me, Dave. I don't know whether you ever felt that. She used to make me wear a T-shirt saying, "It's my brother's birthday today," even though we were twins. I mean, that scarred me for life, that. But it'll be interesting to see how, if they're both in the starting line, it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I'm sure they'll be in the build-up to the match. They'll be, you know, they'll be in the headlines. The game itself, Newcastle are favourites. You know, that tells you how bad Cardiff are. One thing I remember last season, Rafa Benitez, he seemed to make a habit of not losing these games. Games against teams that they might be in trouble with at the end, come the end of the season. They had a decent record, and I can see Newcastle winning this. I thought they acquitted themselves really well against Tottenham last week. In fact, I thought they were the better side, to be honest. Very unlucky not to get anything out of it. I think the odds have probably reacted to that performance, because it was a good performance, whereas Cardiff were useless. I have to go for Newcastle here.
Yeah, it was a decent performance from Newcastle. I think catching Spurs at the right time in that match, even though they didn't pick up a point in the game, with Spurs having players that were just coming back either from injury or had maybe the World Cup on their mind and in their legs in that game, they could have grabbed a point in that match. I think when Rondon, I'm going to mention Rondon here, but when Rondon and Muto came on in that game, they injected a little bit of work rate and their performance picked up. And Newcastle, by the way, incredible record against Cardiff. They've won their last 10 in the league against Cardiff. That's their longest winning run against any opponent in league history, Newcastle against Cardiff. So that could be, maybe might have not have a bearing on the result, but it's interesting anyway. So Newcastle for you, Derek, at 29-20.
Yeah, it's a confident selection, Newcastle. I think it will get punters off to a good start heading into the 3 o'clock kickoffs.
Okay, we'll skip over those 3 o'clock kickoffs because we're previewing the televised games here. We'll move on to Chelsea versus Arsenal, which is the big game this weekend at Stamford Bridge. 5:30 kickoff this one. Chelsea, a shade of odds on at 5-6. The draw 11-4. Arsenal in the betting at 3-1. Enhanced odds, Alvaro Morata to score and Chelsea to win. That was 15-8. We're going 2-1. And if you fancy Arsenal, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to score and Arsenal to win was 5-1. That's been enhanced to 11-2. The stats coming into this game make a grim reading, Derek, for Arsenal fans. Chelsea have won 5 of their last 6 at home against Arsenal, the exception being the 0-0 draw last season. And Arsenal have actually failed to score in 4 of their last 5 Premier League visits to Stamford Bridge. And Maurizio Sarri, when he was in charge at Napoli, lost just 4 of his 57 home league games. So his success at Napoli was built on strong foundations at home. Any positives to take from Arsenal's humbling against Manchester City in the opening week of the season, Derek?
No, only the slender margin of victory in the end, because it was an absolute walk in the park for Manchester City, and I feel embarrassed having given Arsenal a chance in that game. I mean, I know one or two people have accused Arsenal of lacking, after that performance, of lacking the stomach for the fight. Well, the Arsenal players reacted furiously and said, "You may be right." I mean, it was a shocking performance by them. The manager, Unai Emery, for 90 minutes, he looked like a man who'd trodden barefooted on a plug. I think he realises the task facing him. And I was amazed how bad Arsenal were. Yeah, you know, I suppose Arsenal fans might say, well, you know, we had a few chances there in the second half. It was a spell for about 10 or 15 minutes. But City had fallen to sleep at that stage. They could have won at any time they liked. I'm amazed, actually, that Chelsea are as big, you know, all hovering around evens, really. Not too far off, anyway, 5-6. I think they're absolute certainties.
Is it a worry, Derek, that maybe it's a bit of a week for overreaction? We've only seen one set of fixtures so far, and I mean, Manchester City were a similar price to Chelsea last weekend, maybe even slightly bigger in the market, and this is Manchester City. We're talking about Chelsea here, who last season were pretty poor in the main under Antonio Conte. I mean, Maurizio Sarri's come in, they look good against Huddersfield, but that's only Huddersfield last weekend. And it was interesting to see in that match N'Golo Kante, who scored first in the game. He is a decent price to score any time this weekend. I mean, he's 17-2 to score any time, and he was deployed in a more advanced role against Huddersfield last weekend.
Yeah, he was. I mean, but the thing is, it was highlighted on the Match of the Day, I think, and so any sort of, I think the bookies will be a step ahead of anybody here. Yeah, he's normally the holding role, but never gets out of his own half, really, but he played more forward because of the arrival of I can't think of who it is now. Who's the rival of the Chelsea player who's played at the back? I think you mentioned a 5-6 Chelsea, the same price as Manchester City last week. But Chelsea are at home, Manchester City are away. And that's a big thing when it comes to playing Arsenal, because Arsenal's record at home last season was unbelievably good. Their record away from home was unbelievably bad. And yeah, okay, it might be a knee-jerk reaction. It was only 90 minutes. And, you know, to have all the scorn that's been poured on Arsenal after that performance is maybe over the top. But it wasn't that they played badly. It was the fact that they didn't seem to have any heart.
Yeah.
That was the thing. That's the thing that, you know, you can have a bad game and, you know, and you can easily turn it around the next game. But when you're lacking something that's so crucial, I think I fear for Arsenal this season. I really do. And I mean, Chelsea only beat Huddersfield. They were expected to beat Huddersfield. Well, last season they were a much better side than Arsenal as well. I think they nailed on.
Yeah, Jorginho is the player you're thinking
Jorginho,
of.
Jorginho, well. Yeah, that was it.
Alex Dunn here. Now, Sam Norris and I last year had limited success, I would say, on the European Naps front, mainly because Sam was taking the reins. And fortunately, he's off this week. So you're left with me, and hopefully I can point you in the direction of a winning nap in Europe. We're going to Portugal for the best bet this week in the Boa Vista against Benfica match on Saturday at 7 o'clock. Boa Vista have got a fair recent record against Benfica, to be honest, and though it's priced up as though Benfica should get the job done pretty comfortably, and that's fair, they should do. They are twos on, though. It's a little bit skinny. There's quite a simple bet that I really like. It's Boa Vista to score over half a goal. Literally, the home side just have to score. It's 17-20, and as far as I'm concerned, that is bonkers.
On to Man City versus Huddersfield then. This is a 1:30 kickoff on Sunday. Manchester City 1-16. I don't know if we've seen shorter than 1-16, Derek. I don't think for the last few seasons when we've spoken, we've seen the team as short as 1-16 ever.
No, I don't think we have. But you think in that case, Huddersfield must be an absolutely monster price. But they're only 28-1. 28-1, Huddersfield, I think that's the worst price ever.
Do you think that's too short?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at some World Cup matches and, you know, it seems like 66-1. It seems like we've got no chance of ever winning. But I still think they have a better chance than Huddersfield have got this weekend. I think only complacency can beat City, but I wouldn't back complacency unless it was 66s at least. I think, you know, we saw what City did to Arsenal last weekend. We saw what they did to Chelsea in the Community Shield. We see what he did to virtually everybody bar Liverpool last season. Yeah, it's a big blow that Kevin De Bruyne's out, but they beat Arsenal last week pretty much without De Bruyne. He didn't come on till late. What can you say about this game from a betting point of view? It's how far. I think Huddersfield are one of the worst teams seen in the Premier League, even though they stayed up last season comfortably in the end. I'm still trying to work that one out. City are probably, by common consent, the best team the Premier League's ever seen.
Yeah.
You're looking at a handicap, and I can see it being, you know, yeah, Huddersfield are going to go there and keep it tight. They claimed a couple of scalps last season. I don't think they were absolutely mauled by City either in two matches last season.
This is the one team. I mean, Manchester City scored in 17 of their last 18 Premier League games, or have scored in 17 of their last 18. The team they failed against, Huddersfield, in May. That was an extraordinary game, that one, Derek. I mean, cast your mind back to that game at the Etihad in May. It finished 0-0. Huddersfield, the only team last season to stop Pep Guardiola's men scoring at home in the Premier League. So I think City will no doubt have that on their mind as well. But it shows that maybe it can be done, Derek.
Well, yeah, but it was in May and City had won the league. And, you know, it's a bit different this time around, isn't it? What I'm saying is that maybe City's commitment wasn't 100% then. I'm going for -3 City here. I think it's, what price is that, Dave?
It's 8-5, Derek. Odds against 8-5.
Yeah, man, I can see City scoring 4 or 5 here this weekend.
Okay, Manchester City to win the game. If you're looking at the enhanced odds on Manchester City to win the game comprehensively, enhancement Sergio Aguero to score, Man City to win, both teams to score was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 7-2. And I'm not sure you'll be interested in the Huddersfield enhancement here. Steve Mounier to score and Huddersfield to win was 50-1. That's been enhanced to 66-1. Kevin De Bruyne injury. I mean, further down the line, Derek, they've got an incredible amount of talented players in that squad, but more in advanced roles than De Bruyne, who sits a little bit and just screens that back four. he's going to be, I mean, the reports are suggesting he's going to be out from anywhere between 2 and 4 months. Does that affect their title challenge or not, in your opinion?
Yeah, it does, because he's an absolutely sensational player, the best player in the Premier League by a country mile last season, despite what the Player of the Year awards suggested. Yeah, you're going to miss a player like him. But they've got such a great supporting cast that, you know, they're still heavy favourites to win the league even without him. He's a sensational player. But at the moment, they're beating teams so easily that they can do without him, can't they? I mean, even, you know, I'm trying to work out who would play in his place. Because yeah, you're right, maybe they haven't got a like-for-like replacement.
I think in the transfer window, Guardiola, he didn't get the player that he wanted to support Kevin De Bruyne in that particular position. If De Bruyne either needed a rest, because he played almost every minute last season, or if he got injured like he has done on Wednesday.
It'll be a combination
of Gundogan, Fernandinho, Fabian Delph as well. I think they have got an abundance of talent still.
Yeah. I mean, but his importance to City shouldn't be underestimated. I mean, if I'm just trying to work out a Liverpool player Roberto Firmino, if he was out for 3 months, I would fear the worst for Liverpool. But if it was a level playing field, if you had a number of clubs in the Premier League that were almost around City's level, then you'd be thinking, well, you know, the title odds have to be tweaked here. But they're so far ahead of the rest at the moment, apart arguably from Liverpool, that, you know, they're still... I don't even think they're going to take a move in the market, to be honest.
No. Brighton versus Manchester United is the first game on, or the only televised game on Sunday, 4 p.m. kickoff. Brighton are 19-5 to win it. The draw 13-5 with Manchester United, odds on at 3-4. The enhancements, Glenn Murray to score and Brighton to win, was 13-2. That's been enhanced to 7-1. And if you fancy Romelu Lukaku to score and Manchester United to win, that was 9-5. That's been boosted to 2-1. This is a hashtag your odds game as well, as all the games in the Premier League are this weekend. So if your bets, or you want your bet on the William Hill website and it's not already there, use the hashtag your odds and tweet to @WilliamHill and the traders will price it up. Brighton were beaten last weekend 2-0 against Watford. United statistically were dominated by Leicester, but managed to edge them 2-1 in a game where they conceded more possession at home than you'd expect from a top six side, Derek. Paul Pogba had a good game. Alexis Sanchez had a not so good game. Did you watch that match, Manchester United versus Leicester, Derek?
I did, yeah. I went for Leicester that night. And, you know, they did have a lot of the ball and more than you'd have expected. But I thought United did a professional job on them, a Mourinho-type job on them. You know, okay, they went to United like they were under Fergie, you know, taking the match to a team and murdering them, really. But to be honest, even though I'd backed Leicester, all through that game I thought, this is United's game all over. And I think that's what you get under Mourinho. It ain't entertaining, it ain't thrill a minute. But we got the points. They went no way on earth were they the second best team in the Premier League last season, yet they finished runner up. And that's because of these kind of performances. And they'll beat Brighton. We saw Brighton's limitations last season. They can't score goals, basically. I don't think they're going to get much of a chance to score against United either, the way Mourinho sets up. I think this looks absolute stinks, Dave, of United to win 2-0 this game. Maybe 1-0, 2-0 at best. And a typical Mourinho performance. I think that's nailed on.
1-0 Manchester United is 9-2. 2-0 Manchester United in the betting at 6-1. And if you fancy just Manchester United to win 2-0 in the game is 13-8. Paul Pogba at the moment, Derek, is the talk of the town. He's actually got 12 in his last 26 for Manchester United in the league. 27-10 he is to score any time. So on those stats, that 27-10, very interesting for Pogba. But now Pogba and Mourinho reportedly only conversing through Pogba's agent, Mino Raiola. Where does this end? How does this end, Derek?
I think it will end with him leaving as soon as he can, really. It's not a happy relationship. Reports are now, it seems to be damage limitation reports saying that, you know, all this talk about them being at loggerheads is being overstated, blah, blah, blah. But that's, you know, that something serious is wrong there. I found it interesting that the kerfuffle over the penalty that Pogba scored last week, you know, when Alexis Sanchez wanted to take it,
yeah.
newspapers didn't make more of that, because it was, from Pogba's point, his skipper that night, and he knows his striker who's being slated by all the fans and who needs a goal for his confidence, wants to take the penalty. What would you do in that position? He got a bit of praise for being single-minded and strong enough to say, no, I'm taking it. But I'm thinking, if I was skipper that night, I'm pretty sure I would have let Alexis Sanchez take it. What do you reckon? What would you have done?
Well, Alexis Sanchez can't hit a barn door with a banjo at the moment, can he? I mean, he looks like an imposter, doesn't he, Derek, really? You think about how well he played for Arsenal throughout his career. I know towards the end, that relationship with Arsene Wenger definitely soured and he wanted a move. I think he wanted to move to Manchester City, ended up on the other side of Manchester. But he looks a shadow of his former self.
Every player that plays under Mourinho is like that. Seriously. I mean, Look at the players he's let go. I mean, Eden Hazard under him. That's, you know, when the season Mourinho left, didn't try a leg. When you've got great players, and he's managed big clubs, so he's managed an awful lot of great players, they want to be allowed to play football. He doesn't allow it. And I can't think of a player in, say, the last 10 years of his management that he's improved. They've all regressed under him, and I've said on this podcast many times, as a manager, he's yesterday's man. People are finally waking up to that.
So best bet in this game, David, Manchester United to nil?
Yeah, United to win to nil. I think that's nailed on.
13-8, that is. And we've got Monday night football. It returns with Crystal Palace versus Liverpool, 8 p.m. kickoff. Palace are 5-1 to win the game. The draw 15-4. Liverpool in the betting at 4-9. Sadio Mane was sensational last weekend, and he's got a great record against Crystal Palace as well. He scored 5 in his last 7 against Palace. He is 8-5 to score any time and 11-2 to score the first goal in the game, which could be, I think, pretty decent value. Got 2 in that dominant performance against West Ham. I tell you what, Derek, Naby Keita, he looked electric in that game, I thought.
He did. You know, I was watching it on TV, and Jamie Redknapp come on after 8 minutes and said he looks like he's been here 8 years. But 2 minutes before, I'd sent a text to my mate saying, how good does Keita look? That was after 6 minutes. He looked, I mean, because he's making his competitive debut at Anfield, first game of the season. Jesus, he did look sensational. Having said that, I remember Keita played against West Ham on his debut, I think, at our first game of the season, or soon after he arrived, and he looked sensational that day as well. He wasn't a bad player, Keita, but he was no world-beater. I think he looked a class act as Keita. But West Ham, I mean, I give them a chance at Anfield. How bad were they?
Derek, just to put in there, I saw that starting lineup, and their midfield trio was Jack Wilshere, Declan Rice, and Mark Noble. I feared for them when that team news was announced.
I did. I thought all this money they've spent in the summer and they've still got Mark Noble as the key man. I'm sorry, I can't have it. Even Daniel Sturridge scored against them. That's how bad they were. I read somewhere, I'm not saying Sturridge is a hypochondriac, but he wouldn't visit the Dead Sea until he found out what it died of. I mean, and he comes on and it takes about a minute to score against them. They were terrible, West Ham. Liverpool will find a tougher game against Palace. They've been boosted, of course, by Wilfred Zaha signing a new contract. He's been sensational for them. But I don't know why he wins so much acclaim. He's only one team, isn't he, Zaha? I've got to go for Liverpool here. 4-9 has given nothing away. I mean, the manager, this brings Roy Hodgson, of course, up against his old Liverpool team. He will have looked at this game, Hodgson, and come to the conclusion that a draw would be a fantastic result. This is because he always does. I can't have them. Decent performance by them in the opening day, but Liverpool right now, look, they look unstoppable. I know it's only one game. They were great pre-season, but the signings they've made, you know, there's a real feel-good factor about Liverpool now, and it's these games they need to get. They can't afford to drop points if they're going to keep tabs on Man City. That's the mistake they made last season. They started off sluggishly. I don't think that will happen this time around. I think they'll win, but I think both teams will score.
I like that bet as well, Derek. I mean, I put that up last weekend. If only I'd known about West Ham. Liverpool are 7-4 to win the game with both teams scoring. Stat that lends itself to that as well. Both teams have scored in 11 of the last 12 meetings between the two sides. And you mentioned Wilfred Zaha as well just a few moments ago, Derek. And needs just one more goal to become Crystal Palace's all-time highest Premier League goal scorer. Admittedly, Chris Armstrong holds that particular accolade at the moment, and he scored 23. So Zaha hasn't needed to do much to, well, he will eclipse that total at some point. It could be this weekend. 23-10 he is to score any time, Wilfred Zaha. Nap selections then, Derek. We both started off 0-1, shall we say. What's your best bet this weekend?
I don't have to go for big prices this early in the season. I think Chelsea are nailed on to beat Arsenal 5-6. I'm going to go for that.
Okay, now I'm a glutton for punishment, so I'm going for the bet that I mentioned last weekend. I do like it. You've put it up as well, Derek. Liverpool to win and both teams to score away at Crystal Palace this weekend. The double pays just over 4-1, so that's Chelsea at 5-6 and Liverpool at 7-4. We're back in a couple of moments' time. We're going to hear from Jason Burt from the Daily Telegraph, and we'll go through the burning topics in the world of football with Jason and Derek very, very shortly, so stay tuned for that.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, as promised, we're joined by the Telegraph's chief football correspondent, Jason Burt, to reflect on the opening weekend of the Premier League. And we're going to talk about Arsenal and, in particular, Tony Adams' comments about Unai Emery after just the first week of the season. First of all, a warm welcome to Jason. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, I'm just at a very wet Crystal Palace training ground today, so summer's definitely over.
Big test for Palace this weekend as well against Liverpool.
It is, actually, yeah. But I think they're very, very pleased that they won their first game away at Fulham. That was a really professional performance that kind of smacked of a team that really belongs in the Premier League and kind of, you know, cut through the euphoria around Fulham. And I think there was a very good performance by them.
I always feel in the lead-up to the second week of the season, Jason, that it's important not to overreact from the first round of fixtures. And I think we've had quite a bit of overreaction, in fact. Tony Adams, his comments on TalkSport during the week, following Arsenal's defeat against Manchester City, were particularly vociferous. He was critical of Unai Emery and questioned what he had been done in the summer months. That's a bit much over the top, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, I think what you see is, you know, you can see what Emery is trying to do. Obviously, he's got a clear idea of the way he wants Arsenal to play, but it's going to take an awful long time for this to turn around. And to be fair to Arsenal, they're well aware of that. I mean, they can't change the whole team. There's a lot of bad habits to be unlearned, a lot of, you know, new ideas to be put across. And obviously, one of the things that people latched onto quite a lot was Peter Cech playing the ball out from the back and not really working particularly well. In fairness, we saw that under Pep Guardiola when Claudio Bravo was in goal. And sometimes it may be a situation where, to an extent, Unai Emery is testing out Peter Cech to see if he can be the goalkeeper who can play that sort of role for him. He's obviously bought Bernd Leno, and he's sitting on the bench last weekend wondering probably why he's not starting. And maybe he, you know, Emery's got half an eye on changing the goalkeeper eventually, but he wanted to give Cech a chance.
And Derek, we talked about knee-jerk reactions earlier on in the podcast. Arsenal, I mean, you mentioned on a few occasions on the podcast this week and indeed throughout last season about their slightly suspect underbelly, shall we say.
Well, it's underlined that by the fact that you look at what they did at home last season and what they did away from home, you know, and that tells you that team's got no character away from home. They just, God knows how many they lost. I think they only won one game after Christmas away from home, and that was the final weekend of the season. So, you know, in a nutshell, they just haven't got the bottle, and nothing that happened against City last week made you think that Emery has injected it. I wouldn't get too worked up about what Tony Adams has to say. I mean, a big surprise is that you didn't fall asleep halfway through his sentence. I mean, the guy has been devalued as a football pundit a long time ago. And what you say about, is it a knee-jerk reaction, Dave? Football writers, and I'm sure Jason will agree, have to operate on an knee-jerk reaction. I mean, we've seen it so often. For instance, look back a few years when that Federico Macheda scored a hat-trick, I think it was for Man United, or scored the winner, cracking winner. He was going to be the next big thing. Disappeared without trace. Same with Adnan Januzaj. He scored two goals against somebody or other. He was the next big thing. He disappeared without trace as well. It's just the nature of football. That said, I think there are big, big problems at Arsenal, and I think Emery is going to have to be given an awful lot of time to get things right there.
What do you reckon about Arsenal going forward the rest of the season, Jason?
Yeah, I think to be fair to them, they're well aware of the problems at the club, and I think obviously they have to be, because you can't expect Unai Emery to come in and change their fortunes overnight. But people will turn around and say, you know, sometimes coaches come in and have an immediate impact, and you see that. But actually, you know, he's following on from Arsene Wenger. They're basically all of Arsene Wenger's players, the players who've grown up under Arsene Wenger at Arsenal. So you've got an awful lot of things to change there. I think Arsenal aren't expecting an awful lot this season. I think they're desperately hoping they can get into the top four, which some of us might argue is expecting an awful lot. But if they could scrape in the fourth place and maybe have a good run in the Europa League. Remember, Unai Emery's won that three times with Seville, and I think they've probably got half an eye on that as possibly even their best chance of getting into the Champions League. And I think they know it's going to take quite a long time to sort things out at Arsenal. But in saying that, I do look at that team and think there are not a lot of players there who I believe will be Emery players, or especially in that midfield area. You look at some of them and think, I'm not quite sure they're going to fit into what he wants to do. So there could be quite a lot of pain ahead for Arsenal in terms of actually having to try and move some of these players on. Because the other thing that Arsenal fans won't want to hear is they've overspent, really. I mean, they spent an awful lot of money at the end of Arsene Wenger's reign. You saw over the summer they didn't spend a lot of money. So there's an awful lot of things to sort out financially as well at the club before they can actually rebuild the team.
Away from Arsenal, Jason, which players impress you most on the opening weekend and could be worth following for the rest of the season? Maybe from a betting perspective. One player that caught my eye was James Maddison, who I didn't know that much about on the opening Friday, went to Old Trafford, performed with a lot of poise and maturity, and I think he'll get opportunities for Leicester this season.
I do. I think he's a good one to highlight. I have to do my Telegraph fantasy football team, and I picked Maddison out as a sort of a player who could be quite influential in terms of the goals and assists that Leicester score this season. You saw that on Friday night at Old Trafford. He looked like he belonged on that stage. He almost scored a goal. He was involved in most of the creative play Leicester had. And it's interesting, they trusted in him to play him in that number 10 role. You know, it's a big money move from Norwich City, but I watched him a little bit last season at Norwich. I was very impressed by him. I think already, you know, the England setup, I've got an eye on him as one that could come through, because one of the things we saw with the World Cup in the summer, England lacked that kind of creative player in that role. And if somebody like Maddison can have a good season at Leicester, it wouldn't surprise me if he forces his way even into the England squad. Mm. Beyond that, the two players I was really impressed with, one was Naby Keita at Liverpool, who we've been waiting for a long time. There's an awful lot of pressure on his shoulders to come in. You know, he wore the number 8 shirt at Liverpool, which we know is obviously a, you know, legendary shirt with Steven Gerrard. And he looked like he belonged straight away. And I think that was a very impressive debut for him against West Ham. And the other one is another young player, as Wan-Bissaka at Crystal Palace, who I thought was exceptional in their win against Fulham. He came into the team last season out of nowhere, really, out of the youth academy because of an injury crisis. And again, you know, everyone was talking about Ryan Sessegnon in terms of what he would do last Saturday, but the young sort of fullback who caught the eye was really Wan-Bissaka, and I thought he was really impressive for Crystal Palace.
James Maddison, by the way, is 23-10 to score any time against Wolves this weekend. Naby Keita and Wan-Bissaka, the other two players that Jason's highlighted. What about you, Derek?
Well, a couple of names from Liverpool, not the obvious ones. Last week, Dave, I was gutted that we ended the broadcast without me mentioning Sadio Mane as a potential outsider for a top goal scorer. He was 50-1. He scored a double last weekend. He always gets off to a flyer. And now he's 20-1. I think he will, I've mentioned it before, I think we might this season might well find out Mo Salah, and I reckon Mane will come into his own this season. And further back in that Liverpool midfield, Naby Keita, no point singling him out because everybody knows he's going to be the real deal just after one 90 minutes performance. But it was interesting that right from the start, Gini Wijnaldum played in that game. All the riches that Jurgen Klopp has to pick from in that midfield. And he loves Gini Wijnaldum. And I do too. I think he's a vastly underrated player. And I think we might see his true worth this season.
I wonder, Jason, where that leaves Jordan Henderson. Maybe not. I think last season, club captain expected to be in every single starting lineup. That might not be the case this season.
I think the thing about Liverpool is obviously they're going to play an awful lot of games this season. Hopefully they'll go deep into the Champions League again. We expect them to be Manchester City's closest challengers. And the way they play, they need a lot of energy in that midfield. And what was one area of the team we thought they were a little bit stretched last season, the same sort of midfield tended to play every game. Now he's got a situation where he can rest Henderson, he can rest Fabinho, and he's got good players in there who can obviously just do as well. Henderson is clearly worried about it, I would have thought. You know, he wanted to come back early from the World after the World Cup. He wanted to come back to pre-season training. Jurgen Klopp says, no, don't rest properly. So he is the club captain. Obviously, I think he will play a large number of games this season, but he won't be a shoo-in for the side simply because of the competition for places. And now he's just at Liverpool, which is what they need to have if they're going to be a top team, they're going to challenge for Manchester City's title.
Jason, last weekend as well, were there any teams that disappointed you or maybe were slightly underwhelming given the big build-up towards the start of the season? West Ham was one that myself and David picked out earlier on the podcast.
I think it was a pig of a game for them to have, Liverpool away in the first game of the season. And I'm talking to people at West Ham about it. They were quite optimistic that they might go there and give them more of a game and actually try and take the match to Liverpool, which they didn't succeed in doing whatsoever. I think there's two approaches that managers have taken when they've bought an awful lot of players we've seen over the summer. That sometimes they've just put a few in. West Ham went the other way and basically, lined up with virtually all their new signings who were available for them. And I think it'll take some time to gel. I think a truer test for them will come this weekend when they play Bournemouth. Now, if they don't win that game, then I think they've probably got problems going forward. I think they probably thought Liverpool was a game they wouldn't expect to win, although obviously they wouldn't hope to be beaten as badly as they were. But Liverpool are going to do that to an awful lot of teams better than West Ham this season. So I don't think they're too worried. They're disappointed, but not too worried. And I think the one that I thought got off to a really bad start was Cardiff City, away at Bournemouth. That was a game you think, if they're going to make a mark in the Premier League, that's a game you'd expect them to try and get something out of. And I fear for them already. I know we don't want to make knee-jerk reactions, but you do look and think they are terribly short of quality. And the other one was Huddersfield Town. Again, a home to Chelsea, an opportunity to lay down a marker against one of the bigger teams. But they were blown away quite well by Chelsea. And again, I'm slightly fearful of them with that second season in the Premier League. They've bought a lot of players again. They've spent some money, but I wonder whether they're going to have enough goals in them to stay in the league.
I'm looking at that Cardiff-Newcastle game, Jason, kick-off 12:30 on Saturday, and thinking that is going to really set the tone for their season, Cardiff. That's a mammoth clash for them.
Yeah, if you talk to Neil Warnock and talk to people at Cardiff, clearly they're going to put an awful lot of store on their home form. They've got that, they've got amazing support behind them. It's very passionate support. They're going to have to try and harness that as best they can. You find with, all teams, but especially with promoted teams, especially with teams new to the league, the home form is key. If they can make that a bit of a fortress, there's a cliche, but clearly that they will try and do that and try and get some good results there. Then anything away from home, it's your home games that are going to keep you up, really. If you can win enough home games, then you'll stay in the division. But I was quite impressed by Newcastle last weekend. I thought they were quite unfortunate to lose to Tottenham. That was a good result for Tottenham, that. I thought Newcastle looked in reasonable shape.
Jason, thank you for your company on this podcast.
No problem at all.
Are you attending a game this weekend?
I'll be going to Brighton against Manchester United, which should be a fascinating encounter. I was slightly disappointed with Man United last Friday, but that's not a new experience.
3-4 Manchester United to win that game. Derek, thank you for your company.
Pleasure.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in so far. We're going to finish this podcast with a look at the action in the Football League, and we're joined by Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross.
Hi, my name's Pete Farris, and my frustration is still not quite settled after Ipswich battered Rotherham. It looked like I'd at least get my money back on the draw, no bet, and then Rotherham scored last minute last weekend. A losing nap then the first of the season, but I'm going to go this time with something a bit chunkier, and that's Preston, 29-20, to beat Stoke. Preston won their opening home game, have looked very solid indeed, and at home, of course, are, well, Preston. Whereas Stoke haven't looked great in the early doors of the Championship season, losing to Leeds 3-1 will probably be seen in a few months as not a terrible result, but they were poor that day, as they were in the 1-1 draw against Brentford last time out. There's something unconvincing about Stoke at present. They're not quite right, I don't think. So for me, 29-20 Preston looks very good. Okay, yes, Leeds at 4-9 against Rotherham, 8-13 West Brom against QPR look interesting too, but I'm going to go with a value home shout here and say Preston at 29-20 as my nap of the week. That's the Championship. Let's find out what Gav Pushlowski thinks about League One.
There's a number of sides I fancy in League One this weekend. Wickham at home to Bristol Rovers, 6-4, that'll do me. Walsall, 23-20 at home to Gillingham, I like that. I also like Peterborough at 7-5 at home to Luton. But my nap, playing it a little bit safe, but ultimately I've got play 2, 1-2 at home to a side who have played 2, lost 2. So therefore I have to play Portsmouth as my nap selection at 4-5 to beat Oxford. The last three meetings between these two sides has produced 7 goals in those three games. 6 of them have come in the second half. So if you want to boost the price on Portsmouth, maybe higher scoring half, second half is a play. Maybe draw Portsmouth on the double result. Ultimately breaking it down, Portsmouth at home have won 4 of their last 5 games and Oxford away from home have lost 8 in 11. I'd rather a 4-5 land than a 5-4 not. So a little bit safe, but I'm confident that Portsmouth will get the job done. So they are my nap selection at 4-5 to win at home to Oxford. Looking at League 2, here's Al Ross.
So, Morecambe's start to the season couldn't have been much worse. Thrashed 6-0 on the opening day, beaten 2-0 last week, and playing pretty much a first team in a 3-1 defeat at Preston in the League Cup in midweek. Stevenage also lost at Norwich, again largely with a first team. But I think their substitutions were shrewder in terms of keeping the team fresh. I also think Stevenage have a fresher side because their pre-season's been longer and with higher quality opponents. So you would expect them to have been at it from the off. And indeed, an opening day draw with 10 men and a 3-1 win at Crawley last week make Stevenage rightful favourites against the league's early whipping boys this weekend. 8-11, too good a price to leave out of any weekend acca. Some of you only want odds against prices. Stevenage at 23-20 to score 2 goals before Morecambe score 2 is my favourite, but sometimes simplicity is the key. So I'm ignoring the race to 2 goals market here in favour of the outright for the nap, and that is a simple Stevenage to win at 8-11.
That's it for the podcast this week. Thank you everyone for tuning in. A special thanks to Jason Burt from The Telegraph, our FWA guest. He can be followed on Twitter as well at JBurtTelegraph. A thank you to Derek McGovern, who brought out all the greatest hits on this weekend's edition of The Punt, and Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross for their previews of the Football League, and last but not least Alex Dunn, who gave us a bet in Portugal to keep our eye on. You can boost your acca here with William Hill right now as well. Trebles and upwards on the football. If you're having an acca, make sure you boost it here with William Hill. We'll be back for all the action next week, and you will be joined by Alex Dunn, who will be presenting this podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. If you want to check out all the odds, please do it here, sports.williamhill.com and via the William Hill app as well. And if you're having a bet on the football this weekend, good luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.